Final Confession of Mabel Stark, written by Robert Howe and read by Betty Bobbitt. Finally, I resorted to a job with the Cosmopolitan Amusement Company, that mastodonic, majestic, mighty master of the carnival world, on a flat-out cooch. After the entertainment and the grift, we girls would come out and stomach dance and maybe do a balloon dance for good measure. After 10 minutes or so, the educator would run on stage and stop the show so he could do what they called the ding pitch, which meant any rube with another 10 cents to spare got to see us take our tops off. Those who didn't got shown the door. Because the educator was the sort of man who could promise heaven as though it was his to deliver, most of the rubes would ante up no matter how much they'd already lost at three-card Monty. And a minute later, I'd be standing there, the blonde on the far right, half-naked and newly named Mabel Stark, thinking how I'd once imagined a future for myself that was much, much different. It wasn't even the humiliation that got me down. Was the sheer lack of imagination involved. Believe me, it's pretty hard telling yourself you're doing something requiring talent when the whole point of your job is to stand in one place with your chest exposed. It hardly even mattered what expression you had on your face, for the rubes weren't looking there. The other four harem girls of Siam mostly opted for board. This went on for about a month. I got so low I thought about having myself a little neurasthenic holiday and probably would have if I hadn't been living so hand-to-mouth. Truth was, I didn't have time for a nervous breakdown, which in some ways was a blessing and in some ways a curse. In early February of 1912, the Cosmopolitan pulled into Venice, California, which back then was still considered a railroad town and not a part of Los Angeles. On our third date, I was standing up there, ding pitch over, reaching behind to unhitch my halter, when I got a cramp in my right thumb. This slowed me down considerably, and by the time the four other harem girls were topless, I was still wrestling with my snap. Was then I heard laughter from the middle of the tent, the sort of laughter that doesn't so much rise as spurt to life, as though the person laughing had been holding it in for longer than was comfortable. The harem girls of Siam all looked at one another, puzzled, before peering into the glare. Owing to the magnified candle shining in our faces, it was difficult to see who was doing the laughing or just what it was that was so funny. Of course, I was the one who figured it out first, ahead of the other girls and the educator and the frigolet player and the grifters who'd stayed for the show and even the rubes themselves. For when he finally quit guffawing, Algy called out, "For Pete's sake, Kentucky, how long is this likely to take?"